You're listening to PetLifeRadio.com.
Jungle Deep. The podcast that explores the tropical lifestyle. Hello and welcome to the podcast, Jungle Deep. This is your host, Dr. Jones. We are on safari, and I'm here with you to learn, to have fun, and to explore the jungle. Thanks for joining me for today's safari. We are going to explore the rainforests of Borneo and Sumatra with our new field correspondent from the Honolulu Zoo, Stephanie Arney. Today's interview will be the first of two parts. After getting to know Stephanie a bit, we will discuss orangutans and their natural habitat in general, discuss the causes of rainforest destruction in this part of the world, and what we can all do about it to help save the remaining orangutans in their jungle. In a subsequent episode with Stephanie, we will get up close and personal with the zoo's two orangutans, Rusty and Violet, and hear about their personalities.
We'll be right back, right after these messages. Stay tuned.
Petco, where the pets go. Petco, where the pets go.
Pet Life Radio has tail wagging, fur flying, fabulous deals for our listeners from Petco. Get $6 off your order of $60 or more and up to 40% off the entire Petco site.
That's right.
But that's not all.
Because you're a Pet Life Radio listener, you'll also get free shipping on your order of $49 or more. $6 off, up to 40% off,
and free shipping
from Pet Life Radio and Petco. To get these awesome deals, go to PetcoDeals.com. That's PetcoDeals.com.
Petco, where the pets go.
I'm not much of a reader, but I do wish I were more well-read.
There are so many great books coming out. I wish I could find a way to keep up.
Audible.com makes it easy to stay well-informed and catch up on your reading simply by listening. Audiobooks from Audible turn downtime into uptime. You'll be more productive and become well-read.
Now I'm able to catch up on all the great books I've been wanting to read.
With Audible, I feel smarter.
Pet Life Radio listeners, try Audible.com now and get your first 30 days of Audible Listener Gold Membership Plan free. And get a free audiobook. Choose from over 100,000 titles. To get this great deal, go to audibledeals.com. That's audibledeals.com.
Let's talk pets on PetLifeRadio.com.
Joining us today is our field correspondent on zoo and wildlife news here at Jungle Deep. She is the wildlife educator and outreach coordinator for the great Honolulu Zoo, Stephanie Arney. Welcome to Jungle Deep, Stephanie.
Well, thank you, and aloha to all of you.
Aloha to you. Since this is our first segment with Stephanie, I thought we would find out a little about her, then talk about the Honolulu Zoo itself, and then we'll talk about orangutans. So, Stephanie, getting real basic, do you have any pets?
I do not have any pets.
But I bet there are a few animals at the zoo you hang out with.
I do. I have 1,000 animals here at the Honolulu Zoo that are considered to be good friends of mine.
Is that all? Well, okay, I guess 1,000 animals in your life might keep you busy. So, Stephanie, how did you get directed towards exotic animals and a career with the zoos?
All right. Well, when I was a little girl, I'd always been fascinated with nature and wildlife. And I dreamed one day to be a zookeeper and to teach people about all the animals, just like I watched on TV shows when I was a little girl. And somehow I kept pushing towards it and got degrees in education and biology and zoology education, and found my way to my very first zoo in Omaha, Nebraska, and learned that zoos had education departments where they could be, I could be that middle person that gets to work with the animals and, you know, see all these stories and behaviors and be able to convey and share that with the public. And it was exhilarating. It was such a high for me. I really enjoyed it and found it to be very effective in wildlife conservation and awareness. That's kind of how I started. And then from there, I found out there was many different avenues that I could work in other zoos. I could work in conservation projects around the world, and found myself going to Thailand working with Asian elephants. Found myself in Australia working with reptiles such as snakes, and working at an oil spill in New Zealand, and orangutans in Borneo, and whale sharks in Western Australia. And I just kept moving along.
Oh, hold on there, Stephanie. That's amazing. But let me back up a second. Growing up, watching the TV shows and thinking you'd like to do this kind of work, was there someone that stood out? Did you have someone that was kind of a hero or a role model for you for this kind of work?
Well, I guess when I was a really young child, it was, I think there was a TV show called Wild America. And my father said I watched that a lot, but I'm going to have to give all my props to Steve Irwin and Jeff Corwin. They were amazing role models to me. The enthusiasm, the silliness that they had, and their passion was just incredible. And I would do anything to have the amount of energy and passion that they do. I hope I convey that to my guests the way that they do.
And now when you say you found yourself in places like Australia and Borneo, and I mean, most of us don't find ourselves in those places. Now, I can't believe that was kind of an accident. You must have put some effort and focus on, in fact, traveling to these exotic places. Can you tell us just a little bit about that?
Yeah, well, for example, Australia. I'd been working at the San Diego Zoo in SeaWorld in San Diego, and I loved working with animals in these types of venues, but I'd always wanted to work with them out in the field. I was very fortunate to where I met somebody who had seen my passion and provided me with plane tickets. And I sold everything that I own and just went ahead and closed all my accounts, got rid of my car, everything, and picked up and moved my entire life over to Australia and Southeast Asia.
Wow.
And then from there, with my research and knowledge of certain species that are around in that area, I found myself gravitating towards orangutans and sea turtles and just kind of, and whale sharks, and contacting people in those locations, saying who I was and my experience, and then saying, great, we would love your talent to come over here and help us with those specific species and those conservation projects. And then I would find myself, you know, one day thinking I was still working on the Great Barrier Reef, and the next week being on the complete other side of the country in Western Australia working with whale sharks on the Ningaloo Reef. And things just happened like that. It was absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
I'm very thankful.
Yeah, so a little bit of good luck there, but a lot of commitment, too. Most people would not sacrifice as much as you have to pursue your career.
Absolutely. There is always a lot of sacrifice. And let me tell you, it's not easy to go from living in, let's say, a city to finding your way living in the rainforest of Malaysia or in right at the edge of the outback in Western Australia and, you know, working your way around looking for venomous snakes. So it is a different change in lifestyle, and you have to be prepared for absolutely anything, no matter what the temperature is, the weather, the animals that are around, whether the type of food that could present itself. You have to be flexible to be able to deal with these things.
Yes, I imagine so. Well, tell us a little bit about the zoo itself now. You're working there at the Honolulu Zoo. How did you find yourself there, and what's the zoo like?
Well, the Honolulu Zoo is so beautiful and very charming. It's a very small family, or what we say is ohana. Ohana means family here in Hawaii. And I have found myself here a few years back and helped the education department out. And when I was finished with my work in Australia and Australasia area, I found myself to come back here because I love the culture. It's a Polynesian culture, and there's also a very Asian influence as well. and it's just absolutely fascinating. Of course, for me, there's a lot of hikes, a lot of nature, and diving. So, of course, this place is extremely attractive. Like I said, the zoo was so wonderful, and when they knew I was back, they called me up and said, look, Steph, we need somebody to do outreach. We need to get somebody out there in our community that has the stories and experience that you do. It was not hard to say yes. I said yes immediately and started the very next day.
Wow.
The Honolulu Zoo is a very small zoo that started in 1877. What happened is it was originally a bird sanctuary. This area around Waikiki, where the Honolulu Zoo is located, used to be marshes and ponds and lagoons. And in 1877, King Kalakaua actually drained the whole area out and turned it into Queen Kapi'olani Park, which happened to be his queen at the time. And in that process, he started collecting really exotic birds from all over Australasia, especially in Papua New Guinea. He even got some peacocks that were from the Royal King of India. So it was a beautiful bird sanctuary, and that's how we started off. And from then, the zoo became larger, and we started to get a larger collection. And we do have about 350 species here for a total of 1,000 animals. It's an incredible breeding program, and we're also very well known for our enrichment programs.
Well, to help our audience picture this, name some of the kind of species that you have there.
Well, a majority of our animals here are rainforest animals. They're Pacific Ocean, island, and rainforest animals. So you're going to see Sumatran tigers, you're going to see Sumatran orangutans, you're going to see Asian elephants, and a very big collection of Southeast Asian birds.
A lot of birds. I imagine since birds is really how you got started, where it was a collection of exotic birds.
Yep.
And of course, birds are very prevalent in the tropical rainforest.
Absolutely. And we also are really well known for our breeding program of reptiles as well. So we have one of the best Galapagos tortoise collections in the world, and they are known for being the largest tortoise in the world. We
right.
did receive a few of them way back when, and I think sometime around 1929, we received 6 Galapagos tortoises. We had no idea how old they were, and they're still here today. We reckon they're over 100 years old.
Wow. Yeah, well, most of us know they do live a long time.
Very long time. They're known for living between 100 and 200 years.
My word. Okay.
Yeah. They're...
You were going to talk to us today about a very close relative of ours.
Absolutely. I wanted to talk to you guys about orangutans. They are an absolutely beautiful red ape that is mostly found in Sumatra and Borneo. These are two islands in Southeast Asia, part of Malaysia and Indonesia. And we love to talk about orangutans here at the Honolulu Zoo because we have two that we're quite fond of, named Rusty and Violet. They are hybrids, which means that they're a mix between a Sumatran and a Bornean orangutan. Now, most zoos might not be very fond of that because they cannot use them for their really important breeding programs, but we don't mind. We have rescued these animals and taken them in and given them a wonderful home where we could actually help increase awareness about orangutans and other great apes in the world and some of the struggles that their cousins are going through out in the wild.
Well, now, I understand that orangutans are... Now, first of all, let's start with that. I've always called them orangutans, and
yep.
I've checked Webster, and apparently there are a few different proper ways to say that. What is preferred in the zoological community? Is it orangutan?
It is absolutely correct. We actually say orangutan.
Orangutan.
And,
okay, I'm going to have
yep,
to learn
orang
that.
Means person or man, and utan means man of the forest. So orang, man, utan, forest, and that is in Malay. So I'm guessing what happened, which is very common in with animals naming, is that people came to this land and saw these amazing apes and spoke to the local people there and said, what is that animal? And the people there probably said orangutan.
Right.
And with their accent, the people probably heard orangutan.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
that kind of stuck for a very long time.
I see.
But it is orangutan.
And they're one of the very few great apes in the world, and they're the only arboreal great ape. Isn't that true?
Well, it's one of the only apes that spends the majority of their time up in the trees. They're perfectly made for living up in the trees. They eat over 400 different kinds of food up in the trees, whether that be eggs or insects or termites, but most of the time it's fruits. And their bodies are completely, perfectly made to move amongst all the trees. They're so incredibly strong. And their arms are very long. And they have an amazing ability to move about every single tree branch at the perfect timing so that they do not fall out of the trees. They even make nests every single night, and it's extremely intricate the way that they make these nests to sleep on. And it only takes them about 10 minutes.
And they make a brand new one every night. They don't go back to the, you know, and use it over?
I know, it seems ridiculous, right? I think the same thing. But because they travel so much when they're looking for their fruit, they might spend a majority of their time eating fruit from one tree, and then when it becomes nighttime or if it begins to rain, they'll quickly make a nest that evening. Some of them, some orangutan cultures, they even will make a roof over their head while they're sleeping and keep completely dry for the evening.
Wow.
And then in the morning, they might, you know, get a little bit more fruit from that tree, but usually they do tend to migrate between all these different trees to get a variety of fruits. They tend to eat the same thing over time. It could be upsetting to their stomach. They do eat some things that can be quite difficult for their stomach to digest. So, like I said, they'd mix it up, or they'll add other things to their diet to be more omnivorous. Or sometimes they've even been heard to eat dirt, you know, to help calm their stomach down a little bit. But because everything's up there, they have no need to go down on the ground. Mm. The only time I've ever heard of orangutans really going on the ground is perhaps a male, because males can get up to 330 pounds. So if they cannot climb on certain trees because the limbs are too weak, then they might perhaps go down to the ground to get to a new tree. But it's a wonderful lifestyle that they have, and they're perfectly made for that.
They're definitely a rainforest animal. I understand that they belong to the genus Pongo, and that they were considered to be one species until relatively recently. We've divided them into two species and a few subspecies, is that right?
Yeah, as of right now, what I can say is that we do have the two species of Bornean and Sumatran. And within those islands, there are some subspecies that might be a little bit different. And these are differences so much in mostly intellectually. They're researching this more and more. You know, how are Sumatran and Borneans different? You can see some physical difference and size differences and color differences, but they're really trying to figure out intellectually what makes them different. And I know that there's two researchers out there today that are currently looking into that. But yeah, there are the two main species is Sumatran and Bornean.
And there's not very many left, as I understand that their populations is like a half of what it used to be?
It is absolutely insane. Currently, the Bornean orangutans are endangered, and Sumatran species are critically endangered. So the Sumatrans, there is about 6,500 left in the wild. And Bornean, there's about 35,000 left in the wild.
Wow. So, and what's killing them off?
Oh, it's pretty sad, but it is illegal logging, legal logging, mining, poaching, and pet trade. So what's going on?
Pet trade, I guess that would be, we don't see them in the pet stores over here, at least not anymore. Are they being sold as pets in, what, Asian countries?
All over the world, believe it or not, it is illegal. So it is something that's done under the radar. Every once in a while, people are caught, and when they are, there are consequences to that. So they might be sent to jail. They'll get extremely large fines, up in the thousands, for trying to own a pet such as an orangutan or maybe a python or a cheetah. You know, I've heard of all of these animals in the pet trade before, and it is very secretive, and that's why people don't hear about them. But no, they're definitely not in pet stores.
You are listening to Jungle Deep, Deep.
We'll be right back, right after these messages. Stay tuned.
Introducing the new Brett Michaels Pets Rock Collection, exclusively at PetSmart. I created it for the pets that rock your world.
Shop the Brett Michaels Pets Rock Collection and celebrate PetSmart's 25th anniversary with up to 25% off thousands of items on the PetSmart site. Plus free shipping on orders of $49 or more. Go to PetSmartDeal.com. That's PetSmartDeal.com. PetSmartDeal.com.
X-Power is a global brand that offers a complete line of stand dryers, cage dryers, and multiple blasters that cater to both home and professional groomers. Designed to be quiet, lightweight, and powerful, X-Power pet dryers will save you time, energy, and money. The X-Power B2 Pro at Home Dryer is the perfect holiday gift for family and friends. Please check out our holiday specials at viperpet.com and amazon.com. For more information, visit xpower.ws or call 855-855-8868.
Hi, this is Ken Jones from the Prince of Ponds podcast. The frogs are shaking the shakers, the turtles are hitting the slapsticks, and the koi are blowing the trumpets. It's party time here at Prince of Ponds. Out under the swaying palm trees, the pond fairies are kicking up their heels and spinning into light in the twilight. Here on Pet Life Radio, it's time to celebrate the magic of ponds, waterfalls, fountains, and water gardens at the Prince of Ponds podcast.
Let's talk pets.
Let's talk pets.
On Pet Life Radio.
Pet Life Radio.
PetLifeRadio.com.
Now, more of
Jungle Deep Deep.
I would think that rainforest destruction, at least this is what I keep hearing over and over, is how habitat destruction is really a major cause of these animals becoming threatened with extinction. What's destroying the rainforest in their part of the world? What's the biggest danger to these animals?
Right now, it is their rainforest. Being an animal that lives almost completely up in the trees, there is an issue right now with a particular product called palm oil. Palm oil is an oil that is now found in almost everything. You can find it in your cleaning products, such as your dish detergent, your hand wash, your soaps, all the way up to your candy bars, your cereals, cookies, many variety of things. I've even just recently heard that they're going to start using palm oil for a biofuel. So what that means is there's a huge demand for palm oil, and palm oil grows very well there. And a while back, some people who created this product, who founded this product, realized that, wow, palm oil grows really well in Malaysia and Indonesia. What they did is they purchased land, and land there was so cheap, and the labor from the local people there was going to be so cheap that they could offer the final product very cheap. Obviously, a lot of companies gravitated towards that. And now, like I said, you can find in a lot of things. So now the demand is really high. To give you a little bit of a visual, if you picture this was untouched land for a very, very long time. It was one of the last beautiful rainforests. And now we have come in and we are cutting down all the trees. And for a very long time, it wasn't managed, it wasn't sustainable, it wasn't watched over by anybody. So these folks that were creating palm oil were just going through and slashing and burning and just destructing anything in their path just to get down the rainforest to start growing these palm oil trees. And in the process, a lot of orangutans lost their home. They were considered pests, so the orangutan mothers were killed, and the babies were stolen and put into pet trade.
Jeez.
And that's still happening today.
Well, this palm oil palm tree, do they grow it in plantations, or can it just grow in the jungles?
They grow in plantations. So while I was there, I almost cried every single day, because there's days where we're driving, and on either side of me, picture it like if you're driving through Iowa, the cornfields of Iowa, except for it's a palm tree, and it's not a tall one. It's, you know, maybe one story, and it's just rows and rows of it, and you can see, you know, I'd look far, and that's all I could see, rolling hills of palm oil plantations that used to be beautiful rainforests that took, you know, thousands and thousands of years to grow.
So people need to understand that these palm oil plantations displace totally the tropical rainforest.
Absolutely. And what scares me is, yeah, of course I want to teach you guys about orangutans and how, you know, how rough it is for them out there, but there's thousands of other species that live out there that are also just as endangered as the orangutan and struggling because of their rainforest being taken away. So what
That's a very important point.
Yeah. So what's going on now is that enough people complained about it and got mad and angry that we're, you know, zoos were raising more awareness, and finally people started to step up and they said, you know what? We need to do something about this. You folks need to be managed and controlled, and you can't just be cutting down our rainforest. We need the rainforest for other reasons as well, like medicinal purposes and other foods and for air and, you know, weather control and climate. Rainforests are ridiculously important to our world, so we need to manage this more. So then they created palm oil being more sustainable. And what that means is that it is managed. They can only use a certain amount of land. They can't touch protected land. They have to reuse land. And they're not allowed to just shoot and kill orangutans and any other species of animals. They need to capture them and locate them to a protected area. So there are movements, more positive movements, but our demand, our consumerism is what's unfortunately the demise of this animal.
Well, I wonder, could you give us any kind of picture of just how much of this is still done badly, as opposed to the amount of palm oil production that's done sustainably? Is it? Do you have any feeling for how much progress they've made on switching over to a sustainable production of this product?
So where we're at now is kind of a transition. I would say the last couple of years, maybe 2-3 years is my guess, that it's people have really stepped up and said, we want sustainability. A lot of companies are really hearing their guests because people, if you speak out, if you say something, if you ask questions, your favorite name brands will start changing and making a difference. An example that I can give you would be the American Girl Scouts. There was enough children that were hearing about how palm oil was disrupting the rainforest and affecting the orangutan numbers. So a bunch of Girl Scouts stepped up and started getting petitions written and started writing letters to their local senators and representatives, and then started writing to the Girl Scout cookie company saying, please, can you find an alternative so that we don't feel guilty selling our cookies to our neighbors, knowing that we are participating in the destruction of a rainforest and the decrease of species. And eventually they listened and said, okay, look, let's see what else we can do. We'll look at other options. But then there was an organization called the Roundtable. And the Roundtable started saying, okay, we're going to come up with regulations and standards and a protocol for how you go about growing, taking care of the actual palm oil and the land that you're on and that whole situation, how you cut it down, and how you move it from one place to the final product, and also how they treat the species that they come in contact in that crop, in that area, in that time frame. So there's a protocol now that these companies have to follow, and then they earn, let's say, a certificate where that if they meet all those standards, they now can say that they produce palm oil sustainably, and companies like the Girl Scouts cookies can say, we purchase our palm oil from a sustainable palm oil company. And as of right now, a lot of organizations, Oreo and Nabisco and all these other companies are switching over to sustainable palm oil, or many of the companies are signing something saying, we are working towards it and will be in the future. And it is a surprising amount, and I can't give you the numbers now, but the amount of people that are switching over is quite high and impressive. So hopefully they continue on with that.
So we as consumers need to be looking out on the products. We need to be looking out for certified palm oil in our products.
So I think what I would love to be able to convey to all of you is that as a consumer, we can't always believe that the people we're purchasing our products from are doing it in a sustainable, right way.
Oh, sure. Most of the time they are not.
Unfortunately, they'll do whatever they can to make it as cheap as they can, and it might not even be as healthy for you. So I think when you go to look at a product, look at every single detail of where that came from, because it came from the earth. So look at the packaging. Is the packaging recyclable? Is there extra amount of packaging in there? What are the ingredients within the food? Is the food and the packaging certified? And if it's not, and there's no proof that you can see it, whether it's an actual marking on the box or you look online and you can't find any information that company is certified, then ask questions. You are the consumer. You're the one providing them with their profits. You know, you can demand what you want with the things that you're putting into your body and purchasing for your family. So you can call them and say, Oreo cookies, we love you, but we see that you do have palm oil. Are you sustainable? If not, can you please work towards this? Because if enough people speak out, I promise you, they make changes.
Oh,
but they're not going to unless we speak our minds.
That's so true, and that's so important, Stephanie. I'm really glad you're saying it. I want to tell our listeners that they can learn more about sustainable palm oil and this roundtable. It was formed in 2004. The Roundtable on Sustainable Palm Oil are responsible for certifying palm oil as being properly produced in a way that doesn't endanger the tropical rainforest. It's the kind of thing we need to encourage and have more of. That's what it means when you're getting certified palm oil in your products, is that it was produced sustainably. People can find out more about that. I know that, in fact, there's a Wikipedia page on the Roundtable on Sustainable
Absolutely.
Palm Oil. So that's one source of information. I'm sure they have a website where you could get more information about what they do and how they do it. And this is a major contribution to the threatening situation for the orangutans.
Absolutely.
Is there something else? I think you mentioned a couple other things, and not just palm oil production, but there's some other deforestation going on for other reasons?
Exactly. And wood, right? We need wood for our furniture, for our homes, for paper. So the more we take from our environment, we need to remember that it's very difficult to replace that thing. Every time you're writing on a piece of paper, keep in mind that that did come from a tree that was more than likely from a rainforest. So every way that we can reuse as much as possible, and if not, recycle it, just so we can continue to reuse that product anyway. You can also check to see if your wood is sustainable. You can check and see if your wood is certified. And a lot of the certification processes is, you know, making sure that how they cut down their, you know, they're regulated or managed on how they're cutting down their rainforest and how they are transferring it to the location where it will turn into a product and if they're regrowing trees behind them. So those are all questions that you can ask at places where you purchase wood or wood products.
I think that's another point to make just for the general public, for listeners that maybe haven't thought much about it. The wood we get today, it's like everything else. It's a global marketplace. It's easy to think that the wood you get at your local lumber store comes from local sources, but no, not necessarily. A lot of it comes from the other side of the planet. I was amazed to learn when I was looking into this that some very tropical, exotic trees, forests, hardwoods were, in fact, chewed up and turned into plywood and then shipped around the world, that the plywood you buy at your local store could have come from one of these tropical rainforests, and they converted directly into plywood of all things. So you got to ask these questions and got to wonder if the products we're using are sustainably produced. We always get back to the three R's: reduce, reuse, and recycle. Those are things we can all do and need to do more of to help conserve these natural resources.
Of course, and I think that's the message that I try to convey every day here at the Honolulu Zoo and out in the community of Oahu, is all of our products come from somewhere. And it comes from somewhere on the earth, whether it's a tree or it's below the ground. It comes from our earth. So the more that we take, the more that we're using, it's going to impact our lives somehow in the future. Also, when we're done with it, are we going to recycle and reuse it again? Or is it going to become waste? And where does that waste go? And how does that waste also impact the ecosystems that are left? So it's ways I try to explain the circle of life to people and how important it is, and that we're in that circle of life. And the more we mess with it, the more we're messing with us and our own lives. So I think it's a very important message to just get people thinking, getting consumers thinking that, look, all of these things that you're purchasing for your home and for your lifestyle all come from somewhere. And to just think about it, ask questions, and check and make sure it is certified or it's sustainable, and you'll be doing a big part. Never feel like you're alone and that you're the only one doing this. You know, one person can make a difference. It can create a ripple effect and can change the course. You never know. So just do what you can to change your habits.
Lots of good information from you, Stephanie. This has been a terrific first segment. I really appreciate your input, your insights and experience with these topics. And I want to ask you before we go, is there sources of information? Is someplace where our listeners can learn more either about orangutans or about sustainable production of natural resources and or the zoo? I'm sure you'd like to give the zoo website.
Absolutely. We have a wonderful website. You can check our website out at www.honoluluzoo.org. Some great other websites that you can visit would be the Orangutan Foundation International. Beirut is a wonderful woman that has devoted her life to orangutan research in Indonesia. She has created this website and has done amazing things, not only right at the source, but also creating awareness throughout the whole world. That is a website that you can visit, get information on how you can volunteer, change your habits where you are anywhere in the world, or donate money, and you know that that money is going directly into orangutan research or protecting the lands there in Indonesia.
Terrific. Can you spell that website for us?
You can go to ofi.org.
Oh, that's easy.
Or you can just type it in Google, Orangutan Foundation International, and you'll see them right there. Another great website is typing in Red Ape Foundation. And this gentleman is named Rich Zimmerman, who created this organization. And like I said, same things that you could do on that last website within this website. It's just another organization doing their part to help protect the rainforest and orangutans. One great thing that you can do if you look into it is buy land to prevent habitat destruction by some of these companies. I've heard that sometimes it could be just $100 for 100 acres of land. That's something that you could look into. And of course, always signing petitions or getting involved in government issues. These are all things that you can find online with many different wildlife organizations.
Well, thank you very much, Stephanie, for that information. I think that's terrific, and I really appreciate you being on the show. And I'm looking forward to having you come back and do another segment with us and tell us about some other wildlife. Thank you very much.
Of course. Thank you.
This is an update on the website addresses reported by Stephanie. Orangutan Foundation International can be found at orangutan.org. Orangutan Outreach can be found at redapes.org. You can find links to both of these organizations on the show notes page for Episode 7. Be sure to share Jungle Deep Podcast with your friends and co-workers. The show is my creation and at my personal expense. It is not currently subsidized by any business or organization. Audience growth is especially important for Jungle Deep to succeed and prosper, so share the show. You can see beautiful photos and learn more about Jungle Deep at our website, calaverasgold.tv. Now that's Spanish, Calaveras, C-A-L-A-V-E-R-A-S, gold, G-O-L-D, like the mineral, .tv, like television. You gotta check it out. Where else can you go for this kind of fun? Just click on the Jungle Deep title in the header directory. Our show notes pages have valuable links for you. I invite you to email me at jungledeep@calaverasgold.tv and follow me on Twitter. Search for Jungle Deep or KenJones56, all one word. I would love to hear your ideas for the show. Well, the show's over for today, so it's time to refill my Mai Tai, mount my elephant, and head back into the jungle.
Let's Talk Pets, every week on demand, only on PetLifeRadio.com.